Our culture is very collectivist. It's a family unit. So both of my parents were displaced from Ecuador and Nicaragua for different reasons. And so when they came to this country, it's a family unit. We're all living together in the same room, same small apartment. We're all surviving together, making things work. And so, yes, I was born and raised here, but all of my elders are have this mentality. So I was raised like that, where, for example, I mentioned in that article, my brother suffered a traumatic brain injury. And during that time, I was also in an outpatient rehab for my eating disorder, which is life-threatening. I still have, physical consequences of that time period. And I was still there. What does my brother need? He needs me to go do this. He needs me to go. You need me to take him to the hospital, that, that, that. Like, I'm going to be there. My recovery, my life, my health is on the back burner. And my parents did the best they could. But in our culture, it's okay, collectivism and also patriarchy, where men tend to be the head of the household, where you serve the man first. You take care of the man, the boys, the mimados, the mama's boys. And so I learned not to take up a lot of space growing up.
Hey everybody, welcome to Sound Bombing. I created this show for people who want to experience a radical, life-changing journey through the sounds of my diverse guests. I hope that each sound you hear on this show will strengthen your faith, encourage your dreams, and challenge you to awaken the greatness within you.
Drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
We're gonna drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
We're gonna drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
We come to drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new values, and a new experience.
Ladies and gentlemen, the star of the show,
Lamar Darnell Shields.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to my show. I'm your host, Dr. Lamar Darnell Shields, and I'm the creator of Sound Bombing. And my goal with this show is to introduce you to people with ideas that will help you unlock your full potential. If I am smiling, if I am glowing, I need to let you know why. Because just yesterday in the state of Maryland, we elected there's been three African-American governors in the United States, only three. And we just elected our first African-American governor and our first East Indian lieutenant governor in Westmore. And so I'm so excited. We had a great time there. Raheem Devon performed, of course, Baltimore's own Drew Hill. And who could not forget about the great Maxwell? And the DJ was none other than D Nice. But beyond that, Oprah, everybody was there to celebrate Westmore. And I'm so honored to say that his wife, Dawn, and Westmore, they're friends of us. So I'm honored to see the first family, people of color, holding it down. Let me just tell you this, to all my black and brown people who did not attend, it was definitely the flavor of the night. And you know what I'm talking about. We represented in the building. So I'm so excited about that. And it's interesting because today's topic is something that Wes Moore has talked about. He's talked about trauma in his life, in his book, The Other Wes Moore, but he is not going to be on the show. But I want to go back. I want to go back for a second. And I want to talk about when I was in college. When I was in college with my great roommate, Minister Dr. Kevin Brooks, we found ourselves driving down the street one day and we saw a new couch. A new couch. It was new to us, but it was really old. And since we were just out of school and a little low on funds, we decided that we would pick up this couch and then bring it into our apartment. Now, the two of us had been wandering around thrift stores and just driving around the community trying to find some furniture because we were balling on a budget. And we found this ugly couch, dreadfully heavy, but we loved it instantly. And my roommate and I couldn't lift this thing up. It was so, so heavy. We eventually did get it in there, but then we left it outside for some days. We left it out there. And we said, once we get home, we'll look at it. We'll look at it again. And then we realized it really wasn't a fit for our house yet. It would take us long hours and maybe a couple of days to realize that if we were going to keep this. Now, many of us reach moments like this in our lives where we are like the couch that Kevin and I found. sitting by the side of the road, feeling cast off or somewhat abandoned, or maybe just beat up by the losses and the cruelties and shame, worn down by efforts that it takes to keep going, feeling ugly, past our prime, worthless, and even unwanted, like the couch that we saw. Maybe it's the effects of some past traumas, or maybe it's a dark pool of depression, or maybe it's the endless oppression of addiction, anger, anxiety, but you feel too heavy and weighed down to even move yourself into life like you want to. This is what emotional trauma feels like. You feel like life has given you some things that are too much to handle. You may not even know that what's really going on, and some things you just need to let go of: depression, anger, anxiety. Well, the good news today is that there is hope. And my next guest is going to give you just a little hope today. She is a transformational speaker, certified trauma recovery coach, and founder of the Cycle Breakers Club. Now, don't confuse it with the bicycle. We talking about the cycle going over and over again. She helps others disinherit generational trauma and claim their generational gifts, such as resiliency and creativity. Previously, she worked at nonprofit legal industries and graduated from the great Johns Hopkins University, one of the schools that I happen to teach at, and UC Irvine School of Law. Who am I talking about? Priscilla Maria Gutierrez, the daughter of Nicaraguan father and Ecuadorian mother. Regardless of where she's from or where she is or what she's been doing, but let me just tell you right now, she is in the bomb shelter. So put your hands together for my friend, Priscilla Maria Gutierrez. Bienvenidos to Sound Bombing. How are you doing, sister?
Thank you. Bien, gracias. ¿Y vos?
Hey, I am so excited that you are here. You know, I was about to say, my man, because I'm thinking about Westmore. I'm so excited that we have this governor that looks like us. His children look like you. His wife looks like you. So I'm so excited. And he attended Johns Hopkins. All three of us have a Johns Hopkins connection. So I am celebrating for him and all the people in Maryland across the country who came out last night. But before we get into our show, let my listeners, Priscilla, know where you are calling in from. And we like to do a wellness check-in because you talk about taking care of yourself and self-care. Let our listeners know how you're doing.
Okay. So thank you, Dr. Shields. And I'm coming live from Sarasota, Florida. So a little bit warmer than Baltimore. definitely don't miss the weather. And thank you for asking me. I'm feeling very inspired because before this, I went to a meeting. It's a Latina network. And one of the speakers just really resonated with me, just telling her story. So I feel very inspired. And then coming into this space, hearing about Westmore, speaking to you, it's like, okay, everything's in alignment.
I love alignment. I don't believe in coincidences. I think everything is connected. So thank you for joining me today. I spend a lot of time in your state. Your state is a very interesting state. I don't really talk about politics, but it's a very interesting, and that word interesting can go a very, very long way. Yeah. I come to your state quite a bit to work with teachers, parents, and young people around diversity, equity, and inclusion and belonging. Something that you've written about, something that you represent. You know about microaggressions, you know about racism, you know about sex, you know about all the isms, but you've still been able to bounce back and then to move forward. So that's why I'm excited that you're here, because we're just starting a new year. And, you know, everybody typically writes all of these New Year's resolutions. They don't resolve to do anything but give up instantly. And that's why I don't put together resolutions. I put together, some people do goals, some people do life goals, just a variety of different things that are out there. And so we're going to talk about all of that. But let my listeners know a little bit about you and how you came to wanting to do this work around dealing with generational trauma.
So after Hopkins, I went to law school. I earned my Juris Doctor, and nothing helps you feel sure about not wanting to practice law than going to law school. Because once I finished, I was like, this, even when I was in it, I'm like, this is not for me, but I'm going to finish. And once I graduated, I was like, okay, I had this feeling of completion. Like, my parents sacrificed so much for my brother and I to get this degree, this education. And it's like, okay, here's my education. Thank you. Now, what does Priscilla want? Like, who is Priscilla? What is my actual calling? And I can remember since I was in elementary school, I was always drawn to the civil rights movement. And from there, it just blossomed to, you know, in Hopkins, I double majored in sociology and Africana studies because I've always been passionate about social justice. And that's why I went to law school. It's like, oh, you know, I'm going to be a trailblazer. You know, we're going to break down all these barriers. And yeah, and some attorneys do, shout out to those that do. But I knew that that was not going to be a fulfilling path for me to have the impact that I wanted. And so I was a little lost for a while, to be honest. I wasn't sure, okay, social justice, also paying bills, like how do I combine those? And I came across on social media a trauma recovery coaching certification program. And once I looked into that, I was like, this is perfect. It's like you said, there's no coincidence. And I was able to earn my certification. And in this role, I can provide that support on an almost micro level, because I help people, but I'm not diagnosing them. I'm not a clinician, and that's not the role that I want, where it's, okay, this is the criteria for your diagnosis. You might want to take this medication. For me, it's, I just want to support the communities that I love. I want them to feel seen and heard. I want to break cycles of generational trauma because I've lived it. A lot of it comes from my own lived experience as a patient, with a therapist, with a psychiatrist in rehabs, and as someone who just didn't see myself in recovery spaces, didn't see myself in higher education and in so many rooms. I was like, I want to be the voice that I needed as a child, as a teen, and as an adult. And this role really helps me do that.
So it's interesting. We have just so many connections culturally, how we were raised, how the world viewed us with our background, with the language, with how people of color, Black and Latinos, Latino and Black, how we look at trauma. Let's talk about that for a second. We know that when you look at all the studies, Black and brown people, when I typically say Black and brown, I'm talking about folks that like to look just like us, who may be separated by language and maybe by a couple of different accents or how we season our foods. But we historically did not want to go to the couch. We didn't want to sit down on Abuelita's couch or, you know, Theo Pepe's couch or Medea grandmama's couch. We didn't want to do that because it came with so much pressure. How are you combating that image of how Black and Latinos or Latina women in particular approach when it comes to talking about trauma?
I'm leading by example. At one point, and for the majority of my life, I was very secretive, very silent. I didn't have a voice for a very long time. And now I'm at the point where I've worked so hard on myself to feel comfortable enough to share my story, because I know that representation can save lives. I know that there is a little Latina girl that is growing up somewhere and possibly is harboring the same secrets that I was harboring as a child. And if I could let her know, you don't have to carry the secrets of other people's wrongdoings. That's not your burden to carry. So if I can do anything through my representation to help others feel liberated, I'm going to do it. And so really just leading by example, sharing my story out loud. I mean, I've shared so many things that I'm like, I never thought that I would be talking about some of the traumas that I've shared and my family history and things like that. And I get super uncomfortable sometimes, but my comfort is not what matters to me. I'm okay being uncomfortable and judged and talked about if I know that there's a purpose behind it and the impact is going to be exponential.
Yeah, I love that whole concept of getting comfortable with feeling uncomfortable. You know, our goal in our work is as we sort of cross paths in our work, when I'm doing my equity, diversity, inclusion and belonging work, my goal is not to make people feel uncomfortable. But if they feel uncomfortable, that's really on them, because if they know my heart, we know And when you look at the word, when you look at the word courage, courage, C-O-R, comes from a Latin word, which means heart, corazón in Spanish, which means heart. When you're sharing your heart with someone, you're being courageous. And when you share your story, it's very liberating because nobody can use that against you. One of the things that I love about Kevin Hart, he was being interviewed by Oprah on Super Soul Sundays. And he says, I know, you know, when I was coming up and starting, you know, performing as an entertainer, people are going to say, they're going to talk about how black I am, how poor I am, how short I am. And he said, after they say all of that, you know, what else can they say about me? I've accepted those things and they can no longer use them against me. And so when you talk about this feeling of liberation, sharing your story, we are definitely giving people an opportunity to then giving them permission to say, if this little black or brown girl, this little black or brown boy who's come from these humble beginnings, if I can share my story. And we know culturally, we have these cultural ceilings that are saying we're not supposed to do that, which really, really hold us back. So talk to that little brown Latina girl who's watching this with her mother, or this grown, very grown Latina woman who's watching this with her daughter, or that very grown Latina grandmother who's watching it with her daughter and her granddaughter. Share a message with them that will convince them that you want them to share their stories of trauma, even though it may be uncomfortable, that we're giving each other a gift to release this burden that's on our backs.
I want them to know that there's nothing that you can share that would make me love you any less, that would make me respect you or value any less. That's something that I needed to hear. And so I want to share that with any of them that are listening. I had so much shame around certain experiences, and a lot of them were in Baltimore. Not all of them, but I went to college in Baltimore.
I think a lot of people have some shame and experiences and some anxieties and traumas in Baltimore.
And honestly, had I not started opening up and sharing with my family, sharing with very close friends, I don't think I would be alive. I don't think, I certainly wouldn't be healthy. I would have not recovered from drinking and from my eating disorders. I probably would have been dead or very, you know, in a very unhealthy state. And so I encourage you, don't get to the point where I was at, where I was self-medicating with alcohol, numbing myself by starving myself, you know, and other behaviors. You don't need to get to that point. Whatever happened to you is valid. You deserve to take up so much space. Your voice matters. And this whole notion of we don't wash dirty clothes in public and all that nonsense, just silence it, because anyone that loves you and respects you would not tell you to be silent. They would tell you to speak up. They would want you to be your highest self, because anyone that wants you to just stay in a low place probably benefits from you being broken. And that's not someone you want to take advice from.
So there is one of my favorite books, and I appreciate what you said. It's a book written by a guy named Mark Wolin. I don't know if you've read it, but it's called.
You have?
Wow. One of my favorite books. It didn't start with you. How inherited family trauma shapes who we are and how to end the cycle. So for those that aren't familiar with this book, you know, unconsciously, many of us will relive our mother's anxiety. We'll repeat our father's disappointments. We'll replicate failed relationships of our parents. And we're trying to figure out where this comes from. And I always tell people, you know, when you look at DNA, when we talk about DNA, we talk about eye color. We talk about the colors of our hair, our complexion. We talk about our weight and our size, but we don't think about the things that we inherited that had nothing to do with us. Since you pulled that book out, how has that book helped you along your journey? And explain to us some of the lessons that you learned from it and how you're using it to work with some of your clients.
After I read probably the first chapter, I remember going to my parents, like, you need to read this because like, especially, I mean, just everything, you know. So I grew up born and raised in the States. I would say I grew up extremely privileged. You know, I never had to worry about a meal. I never had to worry about a roof over my head. Yes, we were low income at some points. Yes, I went through some serious traumas in my life, but there was no comparison to what my father, for example, went through. He is a refugee from Nicaragua. Can I say anything on here? Or is there like,
you can say anything.
I don't want to trigger anyone, but I mean, I didn't even know this till I became an adult. And my uncle shared with me like, yeah, you know, we were attacked with machetes, threatened with machetes to the neck. My grandmother shot at with AKs, see people get killed in front of them, having to duck down in their house because they're literally shooting into the house. Like, that broke my heart when I heard that. And I think of some of my own experiences, like, why was I in the suburbs with this fear of, oh my, like, we need to watch what we're spending because we're going to go broke and we're going to be hungry and we're going to be poor and we're going to be on the streets. Meanwhile, I'm in the suburbs in a nice house, going to a nice school. My dad is working a nice job. Like, it didn't make sense. After reading that book, I'm like, I was carrying the traumas of my father. And growing up, you know, I just kind of accepted a lot of things as his personality because he's very intense. He's very intense. And now that I know more about his traumas, I'm like, I know why he acts the way that he acts now. I know why he's super on survival mode. He's very, very, you know, he will go in a room and memorize what's around him, what cars are parked outside. He will see like 10 steps ahead of all these possibilities that could happen. And now I understand why I was thinking the way that I was thinking growing up, was because I was carrying on to his fears of when he came to South LA. It's like he traded in one war zone for another war zone. Because he said, you know, when he was there, he was sleeping in a garage. They didn't even have a home. He was sleeping on floors at different points, gunshots from gangs and things like that. And I just have so much more appreciation for my father and my mother, because, you know, at different points in my life, I guess you could say I judged them because I didn't understand, well, why didn't you do this when I told you that this happened to me, or why did you allow this to happen, and things like that. And this book really encourages you to have compassion for your parents and kind of explore, well, why was my mom the way that she was? And I won't put her traumas out there, but once I learned more about her life, I was like, wow, she truly did the best that she could. And she absolutely did better than her grandmother. No shade to my grandmother, but I could see that she tried really hard, and so did my dad.
I just wish every child could find out the story of their parents. And I wish every parent would share their stories with their children, because when you talk about depression, anxiety, chronic pain, we even talk about pain, phobias, obsessive thoughts, the evidence is compelling that the roots of these may not reside in our immediate stuff, but it can come from somewhere else. You know, if we can inherit all these other things, like I said, eye color, weight, and things like that, we can also inherit chemical balance. But in the lives of our grandparents and even our great-great-grandparents, that's why when people get upset, when researchers, we talked about, you know, PTSD, but there's also this study around what slavery has done to people of color. It also is done to, you know, Jewish folks who lived in concentration camps with their family members, or women who've been abused. But again, when you look at a dominant society, we're saying, oh, you're just using that as an excuse. Now, I'm telling people, I want you to understand that they're there. But even though that they're there, you don't need to use them as an excuse. But I want you to hear the sound of my voice. I want you to use them as a reason to say, even though my father grew up in this country in Nicaragua and there was a war going on, and my mother grew up where she did, and they came to LA and it felt like the same, even though, a despite of, a nevertheless, those transitional words are so important when it comes to shifting our energy, shifting our thoughts, and moving forward. We don't want you to get stuck. We know the world is not friendly to women. It's not friendly to people of color. Hell, it ain't even friendly to left-handed people. Be real clear. It's not friendly to a whole bunch of people. And so I want to now talk about, what did you do when you were stuck? When you were stuck, I know you read this book. What did you do when you were stuck? What kind of support did you need that you feel like that you didn't get? And then what are some of the tools that you used to overcome some of those obstacles and challenges?
There's a few times in my life where I truly felt very stuck and very low. And at each of those points, what I needed was validation. And I didn't know that self-validation is a thing. Had I known that, that probably would have helped me a lot along the way. But not even therapists were really teaching me that, because I was in and out of therapy since 16. And I realized that I relied on my parents, family members, other adults to tell me, yes, that was traumatic. Yes, that was wrong. Once I started to just own my experiences and not try to protect my abusers, I was able to start to get unstuck. I was able to start living in my truth. So there was no like magic therapy or magic medication. It really is facing your fears, facing your shame, facing the most painful moments in your life and processing them. There's no shortcut. It has taken me so much work and so much, just so much. So, but
I know one of the things you're doing, you are doing something called the Cycle Breakers Club, which is an interview series. Talk to me about what that is and why is that relevant today?
Yes. So I interview Black and Brown cycle breakers. So now define
what cycle breakers actually are. What does that
mean? Yeah, sure. So anyone who is breaking an unhealthy pattern in their life or in their family lineage and is doing it fearlessly and out loud. So some people have talked about living openly with a mental health condition, setting healthy boundaries. We've talked about sexual abuse, you know, overcoming certain traumas. And I just want to normalize seeing people that look like us talk about mental health and talk about, especially like, for example, my friend Darnell. He is a Black man and a survivor of childhood sexual abuse. It's like, I need to see more Black and Brown men talk about what has happened to them, because this is not isolated, unfortunately, but how many platforms really just shine the light on our people and let us just be vulnerable and soft and transparent. So I think, was it Toni Morrison who said it? She wanted to read a book. She couldn't find it. So she wrote it.
So she wrote it.
Yeah. So I wanted to see Black and Brown leaders talk about their experiences. And there are platforms out there. So I created it. You know, I want to see it every week. So I'm going to do it every week.
So what are some lessons that you've learned about yourself as you listen to some of the people? And then is there a compelling story? I know you mentioned the guy, Darnell. Are there any other compelling stories when you thought you heard it all? It was like, wow, this is bigger than what I've expected. So some of the lessons that you're learning right now from about yourself as you're listening to the stories.
About myself is that storytelling and community is so important. And this is coming from someone who was constantly told, like, why are you so quiet? Do you ever talk? Like, you're so weird. And like, you know, I went to mostly white school, so I really just did not fit in on many levels. And now that I'm using my voice, it's like I'm providing evidence for myself that I can do it, that there are people like me, because you can feel so isolated when you're stuck in your traumas. Like, no one want to date me. No one want to, you know, be my friend if they knew how I was acting in Baltimore, or, you know, my relationship and my drinking and things like that. And then when you start speaking to people that also look like you, that are saying very similar things and similar lessons, it's healing. Because I hear them, I'm like, I can never judge you. I can never stop loving you. I'm happy for you. It's like, wait, if I can give that compassion to someone else, why is it so hard for me to give it to myself? So I've been learning, and I've become way more comfortable exercising self-compassion. That's been a gift through this series.
You mentioned a word, which is to fit in. And there's a book out. Her last name is Selassie. I think it's called it's called Belonging. And I really got into this book. She is from Ethiopia, grew up in D.C., she had an African-American experience, even though she wasn't African-American. But when she came here, she's actually Ethiopian. Her father was an African studies teacher at Howard University. And she wrote this book. And I felt like she wrote it for me, because I've never felt like I didn't belong. Okay, I've come from a world where my family members have told me that I belong, but I felt like I didn't fit in many places. And you just mentioned that your experience is very similar to mine. I went to predominantly white private schools in Chicago, Catholic schools, growing up, you know, with mixed roots, and, you know, those challenges of focusing on that. I would never forget when I moved to Maryland, my mom, who definitely can look like you, and we left our children. We went out of town, and my neighbor came back. My neighbor was like, "Oh, I didn't know when you guys went out of town. I didn't know y'all had like a Puerto Rican nanny that was taking care of the kids." And I was looking around, was like, "You tell my mother?" And I was like, you know, it was just interesting, you know, that people didn't know my family and my roots and things like that, and as if it was a bad thing. But I want you to talk about the concept of the fitting in, because you said you went to a predominantly white school. How do you then navigate that world? Because my children attended boarding schools, my daughters at least, and the schools were predominantly African, large Latino population. But that's something that they talked about now as they've gotten older. When they were attending the school, you know, they really didn't, probably like you and like me. When I wrote my book, What I Learned in the Midst of Chaos, The Making of an Ubuntu Teacher, I interviewed my Black and brown friends from the school, and we all talked about our issues in high school, but we didn't talk about them when we were in high school. And I surmised that maybe we didn't have I talk about men not having the emotional vocabulary to articulate it, but when we got older, they did. So as you think about this concept of belonging versus fitting in, how were you then able to navigate life's waters at your school and even at Hopkins?
I don't think I even necessarily navigated in a successful way or a healthy way. This is actually something we talked about in this Latina meeting I was in before this, because other Latinas were like, yeah, I went to white schools too. And it's like, we did not fit in. And as I reflect, I wasn't meant to fit in. I'm not gonna lie. Like, I've looked on Facebook out of curiosity, like, where are they at nowadays? And I'm like, nah, like I was not meant to fit in then. And I still wouldn't fit in with them now. What I wanted is that belonging that you mentioned. I just wanted to be respected for my culture, you know, not hear racist jokes about Latinos, racist jokes about Black people, not be made to feel foreign. I used to think that I wasn't American because I just felt so like I was so different. So that honestly carried that until law school. So in Hopkins, I felt that I would be the only Latina. One professor even asked me if my parents came here legally, and I didn't say anything. So even as a kid, I didn't say anything. As an adult, I didn't say anything. I think I just didn't have the awareness of what is a microaggression. I mean, she's not calling me a wetback. Other people have called me that, but she didn't do it. So I guess it's not that bad. And things like that. So I think, I love what you're doing, because you work with youth. You actually, like, you allow them to coach the teachers. And so I think if we're able to teach more children, more Black and brown children, what microaggressions are, what mutual aid is, and what expectations and standards we should hold our elders and teachers to, I think that will help them even have that awareness. Because I wasn't aware. All I knew is that it was painful, and I carried that pain, but I didn't connect the dots.
Wow. So your work is definitely connecting the dots with what you're doing with the interviews of the Cycle Breakers Club, also serving as a coach. I did get a chance to check out your article, A Latina's Journey to Self-Care. And in that, you made a statement where we said Latinas are unjustly taught to prioritize the needs of others over their own. Within the Latinx framework, loyalty is a cultural expectation. Sounds like hip hop music. Loyalty, unjust, prioritize. Explain that statement to my listeners, what you mean when you say loyalty is a cultural expectation. So with that, what I'm hearing you say is that means that you won't take care of yourself, that it's about serving and taking care of others. Is that what you were saying?
Yes, because as you know, you're also Latino. Like, our culture is very collectivist. Mm-hmm. It's a family unit. So both of my parents were displaced from Ecuador and Nicaragua for different reasons. And so when they came to this country, it's a family unit. We're all living together in the same room, same small apartment. we're all surviving together, making things work. And so, yes, I was born and raised here, but all of my elders have this mentality. So I was raised like that, where, for example, I mentioned in that article, my brother suffered a traumatic brain injury. And during that time, I was also in an outpatient rehab for my eating disorder, which is life-threatening. I still have, you know, physical consequences of that time period. And I was still there. What does my brother need? He needs me to go do this. He needs me to go. You need me to take him to the hospital, like, I'm going to be there. My recovery, my life, my health is on the back burner. And my parents did the best they could. But in our culture, it's okay, collectivism and also patriarchy, where men tend to be the head of the household, where you serve the man first. You take care of the man, the boys, you know, the mimados, the mama's boys. And so I learned not to take up a lot of space growing up, just to keep it inside, not to cause drama, be polite, be submissive. And there's nothing wrong with, I like being submissive. That's my love language, being of service to others. But when it's at the price of your mental health and your happiness, that's where it's an issue. Women, girls should be comfortable setting boundaries and prioritizing themselves before they help other people.
When you think about how media portrays the Latin community, what are your thoughts that come to mind when you look at films, when you look at films that choose not to have a Latino play the role, when you look at TV shows that don't really give a great depiction of the real world of what's going on, what are some of your thoughts and reflections about sort of where media is taking your culture right now? And or is there something that exists that you feel is a great representation of maybe your family or the larger part of the Latino community?
That's a great question, because growing up, when I guess there was less cancel culture and people were less, you know, performative allies, if I see one more maid named Rosa, or one more fiery girlfriend saying papi and, you know, being extra, that shit was irritating. Like, I just have to say that was very irritating. And in real life, men would say things like that on a date, like, oh, I heard you guys are freaks. Oh, don't stab me. And like, just all these crazy things. I'm like, okay, this is the last date. I'm not talking again. And nowadays I see more representation. So I think of Wednesday, that was on Netflix. It's a Latina actress, but her role isn't tied to her Latina identity, which I think is a good sign, where it's like, no, this is just an actress who's very talented and she's, you know, just performing. And then I think of Lopez, and I think it's Lopez versus Lopez. It's George Lopez's new show.
Yes.
And they tackle things like racism and setting boundaries. I'm like, okay, like, I can definitely relate. And I love how it's Latinos kind of like teaching us Latinos that it's okay to value mental health, to value and question certain traditions. Another one is One Day at a Time. Similarly, like, they tackle like relevant issues to our community, like immigration status, colorism, and things like that. So I love that. So overall, I do see there's more positive representation.
Yeah, that is good to know. I am was watching this show. I cannot think of the name of it, but it was created by, they played on the film Slumdog Millionaire, but it focused on Native American culture. I don't know why I've lost the name of it right now, but I really got glued to it because that was a great movie I called Smoke Signals that I really love. And it's really teaching me a lot about that particular culture. What I love about it is they're following like these three little Native American young people who love hip hop music, who love Black culture, but also love their culture, who struggle with the elders in the community, who are trying to get them to hold on to their native roots. But the reviews have been amazing because the directors, the writers, the actors, they're all a native people who are also dealing with all the challenges that they've actually deal with. So out of all the things that you're doing, all the things from the writing, the interviews, the work that you're doing around self-care and working with the Latinx community, What is your main goal? What do you want people to know about you, Priscilla, about your work and why this work is so important right now?
I want people to understand that none of us are born empty-handed. So every single one of us, regardless of our race, is born with generational trauma and generational gifts. So for the longest time, I carried so many generational traumas. Now that I've been able to identify them, now I have the agency to disinherit them and give more energy to my gifts. So yes, I inherited alcoholism from my grandfathers, but I also inherited resilience from my parents, from my grandmothers, creativity from my grandmothers. And so now I'm harnessing that creativity into my work as opposed to self-medicating with alcohol. And so if I can do it, there's so much potential for all of us to do it, because collectively, when one heals, we all heal. And I think that's Ubuntu. Is that how you say it?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I looked into that because I saw that that's your philosophy. And it's like, yes, absolutely. Like, we do not exist in a vacuum. We are a collective society. And so, and it's not for me, I am not Black, but I love to see other success and healing for Black communities, because any type of injustice, I think Dr. MLK said it, any injustice anywhere is threat to just
everywhere.
Yeah. And so, yeah. So I was really excited to see you and your work with Black and Brown Latinos boys, because that mutual aid is so important.
Yeah, one of the things I'm proud of, I did a film called Beyond Stereotypes, where we interviewed groups of Black and Latino boys. We were working together for like an entire year. And then so I said, Spirit said to me, we need to record and document these young men. And the stories that they shared was so similar. And at the end of the project, and they got a chance to watch it, they didn't realize that, you know, Miguel and James have the same issues as going on with them personally and at home. And then, you know, there was just so many similarities. So I really appreciate everything that you said. How can my listeners get in contact with you if they want to know more about you, your work, if they want to possibly be interviewed on your Cycle Breakers Club series?
Thank you, Dr. Shields. So on Instagram, it's at Cycle Breaker Coach. And then my website is PriscillaMaria.com.
All right, Priscilla Maria, you cannot leave. The second part of the show is called the Super Bomb Questions. Now, these questions are different. You need to respond as quickly as possible. And we do have an editor that can edit this stuff out, but it's no fun like that. We just want you to respond as quickly as possible with the words or the statement that comes to your mind. Are you ready? Lista, here we go. What is your favorite word?
Loyalty.
What is your favorite quote, Bible verse, or maybe a lyric to a song?
When I becomes we, even illness becomes wellness by Malcolm X.
What's your superpower?
My authenticity.
What's your spirit animal?
A hippo.
What moves you to tears of joy?
My family.
What moves you to tears of sorrow?
My family's traumas.
What do you wish you had more time to do?
Spend time with my inner child's environment. So old homes that I've lived in. I want to visit them.
You want to visit them? Okay. What is the book or books you've given most as a gift and why?
The Autobiography of Malcolm X. I really love him.
What advice are you glad that you ignored?
To not pursue what I'm doing, essentially, because it was a hobby and I made it too much of my identity and things like that.
What's your morning routine?
Honestly, getting on my phone. Sometimes I sit with my inner child and hold her and just talk to her.
Love that. If you were in the Mrs. America talent competition, Priscilla, what would your talent be?
Probably dancing.
Final question. What's your favorite sound?
Probably little puppies.
Like- Little puppies making sound. Priscilla, I appreciate you hanging out with me today. It takes so much to stand up and raise your voice. So I thank you for that. Thanks for hanging out with me and my listeners in the bomb shelter today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I had a lot of fun talking to you.
I had a lot of fun too. We have a lot of things in common. You mentioned Malcolm X. Malcolm X is one of my favorite heroes. And I'm going to give you a little history about him. My good friend, Malcolm, who's from Puerto Rico, who I spent a lot of time with when I met him. He was named after Malcolm X. His mother was actually a nurse in New York City that used to take care of Malcolm. And a lot of people don't know that. So my friend Malcolm was actually named after him. So shout out to him. And shout out to Supremacy for our theme music. Shout out to all of you for listening. Listen, make sure you subscribe. Leave a comment. We want to thank you for all of your blessings, for keeping us on the air and talking about us. Stop being stingy. Share me with all of your friends. We're on every platform. If you like this show, which I'm sure you did, subscribe, go to iTunes and leave a comment. If you want to know more about me, go to drdrlds.com. And as always, believe something as wonderful is about to happen, but some people miss the message because they're too busy looking for the mess. Not you, because you have been listening to Sound Bombing. Take care. Peace.